Anger. What kind of talk is that? Okay. Okay, that's an easy talk. I know all about anger. I'm one of the most angry monks in the world. So first of all, anger. When we deal with anything in Buddhism, we always look at its causes. So when we look at anger, instead of just trying to suppress anger because you think, I shouldn't get angry, I shouldn't be angry at the people I live with, I shouldn't be angry at others. We all think that, but we find we can't do it. So instead of trying to control the anger, we look at the causes of anger. Why do we get angry? And the first story which comes to mind, I like telling stories because they're much more fun, is the story of the husband who had the afternoon off work. And his wife was cooking dinner. And the wife said, darling, darling, I need some eggs for making the dinner. And I've run out. Would you mind going to the market and getting some eggs for me? And he said, certainly, darling, but I've never been to the market before. You'll have to let me know what to do. So the wife gave him a basket and some money and some instructions of where the eggs are sold in the marketplace. So off he went, happily trying to help out his darling wife. And when he got into the market, this young man came up to him. And this young man came right up to him, nose to nose, and said, my goodness, you're the most ugliest person I've ever seen. You've got a face like a camel. The back end of a camel, that is. I don't know what you've been using for aftershave, but it smells like dog poo. And he said many, many, really disgusting things at this man. Things which as a monk I can never say. Because I'm a very, very refined monk, as many of you know. I'm very sensitive. And his husband got very upset. I don't even know you. I've never met you before. Why are you getting so upset at me? Why are you saying such bad things to me? In public, in the marketplace. And that just made the young man get even more scolding and abusive. And it was right in front of everybody. And the husband got so upset, so humiliated, he turned around and went home. And as soon as he went into his house, he slammed the door. And his wife said, you're back home early, darling. And he said, yes, I've never said in that stupid market ever again. People are so uncivilized there. I don't want to go there. I don't know why you go there. People are terrible in that place. I hate that place. It's awful. People are just so rude and uncaring. Is that good? Is that good? And his wife calmed him down and then said, what happened? And then he told the story of this young man who abused him and humiliated him for no reason in public. And as soon as he told that story, he was still upset. His wife said, oh, it's him. That poor boy has got brain damage. When he was very young, he had an accident. He hit his head. And he's got this mental infirmity. The poor boy, because of brain damage, can never go to school. He'll never be able to get a job or find a person, a nice wife to share his life with. He's brain damaged. And he hangs around the marketplace. Sometimes he scolds me and abuses me. He abuses everybody. He's a crazy guy. He's not right in the head. And as soon as the husband heard that he'd been scolded by a crazy boy, all his anger vanished. It just disappeared. How can you get angry being scolded by a mad person? And seeing him calm down, his wife told him, but darling, I still need those eggs. So he said, okay, I'll come get them for him. Don't mind that crazy boy, no, I won't. And so when he went into the market the second time, The crazy boy saw him coming. Put your hand over your eyes, here comes camel face. Hold your noses, here comes the person who uses dog food for aftershave. But this time, it didn't matter. He's being abused by someone who wasn't right in the head. So he didn't get at all angry. He'd go right up to the egg store and order his eggs. The lady selling the eggs saying, "Now that poor boy, I heard about it. What a shame. He had an accident. He didn't say he could never have a proper life. Isn't it a shame?" All the time being scolded. And he could buy his eggs and walk out of the market being scolded in public all the way. He didn't get angry at all because he knew he was being scolded by a crazy person and failure. And the moral of that story is this. If you go home after work and your wife starts scolding you, don't get angry. Assume she must have brain damage. Assume that the day she's hit her head. She's crazy. And that way you don't have to get angry at her. Because that is true. Anyone who scolds you has got temporary insanity. No one in their right mind would scold anybody. And they're not in your right mind. So don't respond to people who abuse you or scold you with anger. That is not the right way. Assume if someone calls you pig face, if they call you stupid, if they call you the worst person ever to walk on planet Earth, they must be crazy. They've got brain damage. So don't take it personally. And of course, there have been many people, maybe the boss in the office, has got brain damage. So let's not take it seriously. Let it go in one ear and out the other. But sometimes you do get abused, you do get scolded. I told this story, you know, there's most Sri Lankans here, to your president, Mahinda Rajapaksa, when I first went to see him in his palace. That he's getting a lot of criticism by politicians doing for all sorts of things. And I wanted to give him a little bit of Buddhist advice on how when in a position of authority and leadership, and people are always criticizing you, always putting you down, you may be president of the Buddhist Society of Victoria, you may be the boss of your company, you may be just the head of some little organization, but people always criticize you. And this is the story I told the president of Sri Lanka, which he liked very much. He liked it so much he invited me the next two times. So he must have liked it. How to deal with abuse without getting angry. And this is a very nice story for the kids. And also, you know, for the kids who are 65 and over. And it's the story of the donkey, one of my favorites. Once upon a time, a donkey was wandering in the forest, minding his own business, just chewing a bit of this and chewing a bit of that. And being quite unmindful, the poor donkey fell in a hole. It was an old well which had been abandoned. Fortunately, there was no water at the bottom of the well. So when the donkey fell into the well, he didn't drown. And he was fortunate not to break any bones. So when he stood up, he was, you know, perfectly okay, except he was at the bottom of a well. And donkeys can't climb wells. So what could the donkey do? Just shout out for help. Eeyaw! And he was shouting over and out, because he was beginning to be hoarse. And after a while, that's been good. He did worse than that. Don't get angry, as soon as brain damage. And sooner or later, someone heard the donkey. Or they heard the sound, I wonder what it was. So they went home and looked in the well, and they were really surprised, and at the bottom of the well was a donkey, going, eeyaw, eeyaw. The donkey was very happy, thinking he'd been saved. But that farmer who found him was a very bad, evil guy. And he knew that that was a very dangerous hole in the ground, which needed to be filled in. And that was a very stupid donkey who he didn't like at all. So he decided not to kill two birds with one stone. I don't like that simile because it's very un-Buddhist. It is to cut two carrots with one knife. That's a nice Buddhist one, you know. Cut two carrots with the same knife. Okay. Anyhow, he decided to fill that hole up with a donkey in the bottom. So he got out a spade and started shoveling earth into that well to bury the donkey alive. And when all this dirt was thrown over the donkey didn't know what was going on. What's happening? Aren't you saving me? Another shovel full of dirt on him, just like, you know, your president, Mahinda Rajapaksa, always getting dirt thrown at him from the newspaper, from the opposition, from everybody else. You know what it's like in politics. But soon the donkey realized what was happening. This farmer was trying to kill him. Hee-haw! 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 Which in donkey speak means, no, don't do it, I don't want to die, I'm too young to die, said the old donkey. But that didn't stop the farmer. He kept shoveling and shoveling and shoveling, and eventually the donkey went quiet. He thought, ha ha ha, I buried that stupid donkey, serves him right. I killed him. But the donkey wasn't dead. Instead, the donkey got what we call in Buddhism, insight. Because he'd been hanging around the Buddhist temple, and he'd heard all his great monks speak. And he realized, don't get angry. If someone's trying to kill you, don't get angry. Use insight, wisdom. So instead of going eeyore at the top of his voice, all the donkey did, another shovel full of earth, shake it off, stamp it in, and the donkey was another centimeter higher. Another shovel full, shake it off, stamp it in, and another centimeter higher. And little by little, the donkey got higher and higher up the well. And this farmer was so busy shoveling earth, he never noticed the pair of donkey ears just come above the top of the well. He never noticed the donkey's head above the well. And soon the donkey was high enough to jump out of the well. And according to the story, as I read it, he bit the farmer on the bottom to teach him the law of karma. And then he went off. And that is the way the donkey escaped from the well. So I told President Rajapaksa, if you get abused and the newspapers or others start criticizing, throwing dirt all over you, all you need to do, Mr. President, shake it off, stamp it in, and you're a bit higher. He liked that. And so should you. We all get abused from sometimes. So if your wife starts scolding you, you stupid husband, you're so lazy, why didn't you get a better job? Why did I marry you? I could have married someone much better than you. What should you do? Get out of that? No. Shake it off, stamp it in, and you're a little bit higher. That is how to deal with abuse, not getting angry back. So these are skillful means. So why do you get angry for? Because if you get angry, you've lost. You've missed a great opportunity. People are actually controlling you. You don't need to do that. There's so many other ways. So, when somebody tries to get angry at you, you just maintain peace. They've got temporary brain damage. I'm just going to stamp it in and get home. I am not going to react. And if you do that, you'll find people stop getting angry at you. You're no fun anymore. Getting angry at somebody is trying to get a negative result, trying to upset you, trying to hurt you. And if you do manage to get hurt, that person has won. When I was first a monk in Thailand, you see the bowls we have to eat our food out of. We also had spittoons where we put, you know, the banana peel and other rubbish. And after eating, you know, you actually wash our bowls for us. You pamper us in the Buddhist society in Victoria. Where I was brought up, we had to do this ourselves. We're grown up monks. We could wash dishes. In fact, today I washed my own cup and it's, where is he, this Franken boy, he tried to actually grab the cup and wash it for him. He said, no, it's a great privilege for me to wash up. I tried that once in my monastery in Thailand, tried to wash my own dishes. And this lady came, and she just pulled the cloth away from me. No, I don't know. You go and teach the Dharma, meditate, I'll do the washing up. And I like washing up. It's unfair, I don't get to do it anymore. Anyway, this was being a very young monk. And when I was a very young monk, I was, you know, cleaning up my bowl and drying it after washing it. And this monk, he was a very angry monk. We found out afterwards it's because he had migraines. You know, sometimes people get angry. If you know why, you can understand why they get angry. So this guy had migraines. And he came up to me, and he towered over me, and he said something like, Paramahansa, that's a filthy habit. Don't do it again. Is that better acting? You know, it's one of the problems of being a monk. You're not allowed to get angry. So the only time I can enjoy myself is I'm acting it out. So I enjoyed it. And I thought, what am I doing wrong? You're drying your spittoon with the same cloth. You've washed your holy bowl. Don't do it. That's filthy. And I was looking at what I was doing. Everyone else was doing that. We always do that. Just wipe the bowl and the spittoon to the same cloth. But he was really glaring at me. And I realized I had a choice. I could either respond to the anger with justification. Who are you to tell me? Why are you saying this? Everyone else is doing exactly the same. But I decided there was another way. What I did, and it took all of my self-restraint, I just looked at him, and then went over and got another cloth. And as I went over to get another cloth, I felt all the eyes of all the monks looking at me, seeing what I was doing. I picked up a rag, went back, and they all followed me back, and I started washing my spittoon, or wiping it, with an old rag. I did what he said. And all the other monks then looked at this monk. He went red in the face, totally embarrassed, and he stalked away, and he never got angry at me ever again. It was a waste of time. If I'd have got angry back, we'd have both been angry, we'd have both been equally low, and he would have won. Because I responded to his anger with calmness, his anger and misbehavior stood out like the proverbial sore thumb, and everybody knew he was his mistake. But now I never responded to anger with more anger. So if you really want to imitate somebody, when they get angry back at you, you just be peaceful and smile. That really upsets them. And it's true, because anger is a way of trying to push your button and get a response out of you. And if you respond in the way they expect, they'll do it on you again. It's a way of controlling you. And I refuse to be controlled by anybody. If anyone gets angry at me, I'm going to do what I want to do. I don't care how much they shout at me. I am not going to let anybody control me in that way. Shouting at me, getting angry at me. And of course, that actually works in real life. The other story I remember with anger is the time I almost got punched in the face over in Perth. It came very close. And this is the story of what happened and how I responded to another person's anger. And this was not a monk. This was a big Australian labourer. This was a time in Western Australia where we just got our new city centre, the Dhammaloka Centre. You've got Buddhaloka, now there's Dhammaloka in Perth. And we invited the then Governor of Western Australia, Sir Gordon Reid, to come. And he was coming. Ajahn Chakra, who many of you know was in Abba, he said, Brahma Wamsa, you look after the tents, the chairs, and all those other things. And he said, the treasurer said, don't worry about the expense. We've moved into a new center, we want the very best. We want to show off. Especially the governor is coming. It was a great honor to receive him and his wife. And so I ran around. And there's a very wealthy suburbs in Perth, you know, Peppermint Grove, Netherlands, Dalkey. These are actually now the most expensive suburbs in Australia. And I had someone in that area who was a hire firm, who hired out these marquees for these very, very wealthy people. And I told them, look, we've got the governor coming on Sunday, I want the very best. And they said, yes, we understand, we'll give you really high quality stuff. And when the truck came on a Friday afternoon, I was busy helping somebody else. So I never saw them unload. And when I actually checked on the equipment, their tent was really filthy. Like it'd been in the outback somewhere, it was covered with red dust. But that wasn't too much of a problem. You get the hoses out. So you get the hoses and hose it all down. Their chairs were also filthy. So we got some cloths out to wipe them. But the insurmountable problem was the chairs for the VIPs, 10 of them. And this is no exaggeration. I was there at the time checking the others as well. Of those 10 chairs, there was not one whose legs were the same length. They wobbled, and not just a little bit, I mean a lot. And so I immediately ran to the phone. I managed to get the manager in the office on a Friday afternoon as she was closing up. And I told her, look, I asked you for the message, I remember that. Look, we've got chairs which wobble. We can't have the governor of Western Australia and his wife falling off during the ceremony. And she said, oh, I'm sorry, there must have been some mistake. We'll have to change straight away. Thank you. But I never realized what it takes to change those chairs. Because all the workers, this is Australia, on a Friday afternoon, where do they go? They went to the pub. So they already started their weekend drinking. And then the manager comes in, guys, stop your drinking, the Buddhists need new chairs. So you can imagine how they felt. When the truck came, I was waiting for it. And it must have been 100 metres from me, still travelling at maybe 40, 50 kilometres an hour, when one of the men jumped out. And they came running towards me with their fist up. Where's the guy in charge? I want the guy in charge! And I came up to him and said, I am the man in charge. And he came right up to me, his fist this distant from my nose. His eyes wide and red. You know, like in Buddhism, the yakas, the monsters. It was only red because of the alcohol. And as he was breathing into me, I could smell the beer. I've never taken in so much beer in my whole life as from the fumes coming from his breath. He was breathing fire. He was about to punch me. I was the guy in charge who had to get him to go back to work instead of carrying on his weekend drinking. He was angry. He was incensed. He was mad with rage. And there I was, this little humble, non-violent monk, facing this huge Australian labourer who was incensed. He was ropeable. And all the workers, all my friends, they all stood and watched. Not one of them came to help me. Thank you, friends. Have you ever seen that happen? And then they got what's going to happen next. But no one has the guts or the nous to do anything about it. That's okay, they didn't need to. Because he had his fist in front of me like this, breathing fire. And I was so calm and peaceful. I just didn't respond to his anger. I was calm with loving kindness and peace. It's one of those marvelous encounters of my life. There he was, about to punch me, but he couldn't. Because, just like, please excuse me, in sex, you do need foreplay to excite each other. In anger and a fight, you also need that foreplay. Usually in Australia, it's yeah, you and who else? Me and my friends, yeah. And then you have the fight. There is actually the last time I flew back from Sydney, actually two times, it was amazing. There was a guy sitting next to me who started to get fired. He was arrested on the other side when we were at Beach Perth. He was banging the seat in front of me, getting too much alcohol, which people do on flights. And I thought, you know, when, if you got angry at me, I'll say, come outside and we'll talk about it. But anyhow, sort of, he was about to punch me. And because I was calm and peaceful, I was not responding. It was wonderful because he just did not know what to do next. And he was totally confused. He couldn't back off, he couldn't punch, because I was not responding the normal way. You know, anger with fear. So if you have anger or violence, don't be afraid. Because the fear will be the cue for the next punch or violence. Because I wasn't angry or afraid, I just stood there. And I held it there, just with my peace and kindness, for about 3 minutes. He just could not move, he was looking at me. And you could see, not angry anymore, confusing. What the heck am I supposed to do next? Because I wasn't responding. And in those 3 minutes, they trucked with the chairs apart. And one of his friends had come over, put his hand on his shoulders, come on, you know, we'll unload the chairs. And I said, yeah, I'll help you. We unloaded the chairs together. That was a very beautiful way of dealing with anger, really anger which could nearly be violent. Please don't respond with fear or with anger back. If you can do that, you're invulnerable. No one can hurt you. No one can punch you. Simply because you know how to deal with other people's anger. If you can manage that, you're in control of angry situations. One of the other things I like to do when someone gets angry or they're shouting at one another is to start speaking very slowly in a very low tone of voice. Do you notice is the way you use your voice can excite people? It can make people very upset and angry because they're going to get more angry and angry and angry. You see, the tone of the voice and the speed of your words is how it can excite someone. Because of mindfulness and our practice of wisdom, it's very easy to use the tone of your voice to actually control people. It's amazing just how we can control people in Buddhism. Remember the story. Because you know, we're always into fundraising. Remember this story of this monk, and he started a new temple, and he could never raise enough funds to pay the bills for the new monastery, just like the BSV. So he went to one of his friends in a successful temple. How do we raise funds? He said, very easy. He said, next time you give a sermon, turn the heaters up in the hall and close all the windows. Make it very stuffy and warm. And when you give a sermon, give a boring sermon in a monotone voice until everybody is so bored they're falling asleep. That's very easy to do for some monks. And so he said, when everyone's falling asleep, get out your watch and swing it backwards and forwards. And when all hypnotized, then tell them, everybody give $100 into the donation box. No 50s, 20s, or 10s. No coins, just $100 bills. Two if you want, but nothing less. He said, I can't do that. That's fraud. It's not. It's encouraging good karma. So he tried it. He closed all the windows, turned up the heaters, gave a boring sermon, which was very easy. When everyone's about to fall asleep, he got out his watch, swung it backwards and forwards, so everyone's hypnotized. Only $100 bills, no 50s, 20s, 10s, or 5s, no coins as you go out. And he made a fortune. It worked. Everybody gave $100. Imagine how much money that would be in the BSV. But you know, you can't do that every week, because people will soon suss you out. They'll soon figure it out. So he waited for a few weeks. He needed a bit more money. He tried it again. He closed all the windows. He just turned up the heaters, gave a boiling servant, got his watch out, had him almost hypnotized, and that's when he dropped his watch. And he said, oh shit. And that's what everybody did. It took you a couple of weeks to clean up the temple. But that's not a good thing to do. But anyway, going back to sort of how to control people with your voice. It's very easy. In an argument, if you want to stop anger and soften the anger, just be mindful of the way you use your voice. When people have an argument, they raise their voice, they speak very fast and very loud. If you're aware enough to be able to speak slowly and softly and lower the tone of your voice, you find you can actually stop people's anger. They don't get so angry. You can actually calm them down. And that's really important if someone wants to attack you, they're very, very angry. Of course, the first thing if someone wants to attack you is run. But you know, imagine me in my robes. There's not much hope of me running in my robes. They'd all fall off and I'd be in big trouble. Be, you know, making a setting. these weren't made to be wet. Well, it's like the other thing, that if you pick us up to take us to a tour, please never pick us up on a motorbike. Once I've been on a motorbike in my life in Thailand, and when you're driving, it's just the wind gets in your robes, you either blow off or your robes fall off. Yeah, that's not sort of appropriate for us to do that. But anyway, if you do have angry people, like maybe your husband, your wife, or maybe having an argument with your kid, just calm down your voice. It's amazing how you can cool situations down. You don't have to respond to anger. Because anger is really awful after when you get angry. A lot of times we get angry at the people we love. Why do you do that? You feel terrible. Both parties feel terrible afterwards. I shouted at a person I really care for. You feel rotten about it afterwards. So what should you do? What you should do if you're always getting angry at other people is have strategies. You know your weak points, your trigger points, why you get angry. And just figure out those. And when that trigger point starts to flash, just have strategy. I've got to be very careful. This is why I usually get angry at my wife for saying something. And these strategies mean you have another path to take. This is called mindfulness, and mindfulness gives you more doors to walk through rather than the same old door every time. It gives you choices. You don't have to respond in the same old habitual way. You can do something different. So when somebody starts shouting at you or calling you bad names, there's so many strategies you can use. Instead of fighting back, you can just imagine that angry person, yeah, they're very difficult to be with, but you only have to be with them a short time. If you've got an angry boss at work, always shouting at you, criticizing you, giving you a hard time, remember, you only have to be with them 40 to 50 hours a week. And they have to be with themselves every hour of every day of their lives. So you have compassion for them instead of anger. Those poor people, if they're so negative towards you, they'll be negative towards themselves as well. Because as we treat others, that's how we treat ourselves. So if you see a really angry person, instead of getting angry back, oh, you poor thing. It must be terrible to have a mind like that, which criticizes me every hour of every day. Oh, I feel so sorry for you. I'll give you a hug. Or maybe not sort of, exactly a hug, but, you know, at least you can have compassion towards them, rather than thinking about yourself, because anger says much more about them than it'll ever say about you. An old saying, you know, what people say about you says more about them than they'll ever say about you. So people shout, you get angry about it. Say that they're in trouble, they're mad, they're crazy, they're just very, very low mind state. They will do something like that. So it says about them. So you don't take it personally what they say about you. They haven't got a clue who you are. So why do you get upset? So this is why when people judge me and they call me this and they call me that, I don't take it personally. They haven't got a clue what they're talking about. There's an old saying, my master Ajahn Chah, if someone criticizes you, they're trying to make you angry by calling you a dog, which is one of the worst things to call someone in Asia, calling them a dog. Don't get angry. Don't believe what they say, that you're a dog. Instead, first of all, check your bottom to see if you've got a tail. If you haven't got a tail, you're not a dog. There's no more problem. So you kids in school, if people call you a dog, look at your bottom. You've got a tail? If you have got one, yeah, you're a dog. You're right. Go woof woof. You're right. Correct. If you're not a dog, don't worry about it. Ajahn Chah told me this story. When I first went to Thailand, it was about 40 years ago. It was just the Vietnam War was still on, just about to finish. So there was many American troops very close by to the monastery. There was an airfield there in the town of Ubon. And he said that one day there was an Afro-American soldier who was on one of those cycle rickshaws being taken from the base into town. And I'm not sure what he was going to do. And on the way, the cycle rickshaw driver happened to pass some of his friends who were drinking Mekong whiskey by a bar on the side of the road, getting drunk. And these rickshaw drivers getting drunk, they saw this big Afro-American soldier and decided to have a bit of fun. They said in Thai, "Where are you taking that filthy, dirty dog to?" Because, he's black, he's racist, okay? And some of those American soldiers had taken the trouble to learn the local language. So the driver of the rickshaw was a bit scared. If this guy could understand, that would be a fight. He'd be really racially abused. But the Afro-American soldier was just smiling, innocently looking at the scenery. So obviously he couldn't understand Thai. So the rickshaw driver said, "Look how dirty he is, how black he is. I'm taking him into the town to throw him in the river to get him washed." Ha ha ha, they all laughed. And the rickshaw driver, the rickshaw driver said, "I'm taking this dirty dog, look how black is this dog, into town to throw him in the river to have a wash." Now that's really frightening for them. But the Afro-American was just peaceful. When they got into town, the Afro-American soldier got out of the rickshaw and started walking away without pain. And the rickshaw driver shouted after him, "No, sir, you've got to pay me some money, pay me the fare." And he said it in English because the rickshaw driver had a lot of business with the soldiers, so could speak English. But at that point, the Afro-American turned around and said in the most fluent Thai, "Dogs don't have any money," and walked away. And that was Ajahn Chah's example of how to deal with abuse. If you get angry, you lose the opportunity. But if you're taking a taxi and they call you a dog in a foreign language, don't get angry back. When you get to the other end, you can walk out because dogs don't have any money. Now that's a great example of how to deal with anger. Don't respond to it. I'm talking about dealing with other people's anger. And the last little story about other people's anger, because how to deal with that from safe business. There's a student of mine who lives in Sydney who told me this story. It's a brilliant story about how to deal with angry business people, because sometimes people in high positions are so stressed out, they're always in a bad mood, always arguing, always getting angry, always shouting at people. How do you deal with people like that? And this girl, called Julie, she started a fashion business in Sydney. She started it herself, and it was a big opportunity to take her company to another level by having this contract with a big fashion business in London. And they'd been negotiating over emails for quite a few weeks, until it got to the point, she got the email back, we were ready to sign the contract, come to London. Now, Julie had a young baby called Holly. I gave her the Buddhist name Surya. A very sweet little kid. It was about, you know, blonde, blue-eyed, about 3 years of age at this time. And so she had to leave her kid in Sydney and get on the long journey of flight to Heathrow. By the time she got to Heathrow, she only had time to check into her hotel, and have a shower, get changed, and turn up at the offices of this big company to meet the CEO and directors to have the contract signed. And as soon as she walked into the boardroom, the other directors said, "You've wasted your time. You might just as well get on the next plane back to Sydney. Our CEO is in such a bad mood. He's been shouting at everybody. He's so angry. There's no way he's going to sign your contract." And my student Julie said, "Look, I've come all this way. At least I'm going to see the fellow." "Fine," they said. "Suit yourself." And what she did as she was waiting was actually sit down in the corner of the boardroom and do her meditation. She was a Buddhist meditator. And she did her metta meditation. Now, you've often heard how the antidote to anger is loving kindness and metta. It actually works. And this is how it works. This is what actually happened. She was doing her loving kindness meditation. May all beings be happy and well. May all beings be free of suffering. You know what it is. And then the CEO burst into the room, really angry, fuming, on fire, and she saw this girl sitting cross-legged in the corner. "Who the hell is she? What does she want? What do you want?" He was really angry, and that obviously got her out of her meditation. Because she was very calm, she could not get upset back. She stood up and walked over to the CEO, who was glaring at her. And she told me these words just came out of her mouth, unpremeditated. And she said to the CEO, who was glaring at her, "You have such beautiful blue eyes, like my baby Holly back in Sydney." That's what she said. Now, that absolutely stunned the CEO. Now, when you get angry at somebody, when you're shouting at them, say, "What the hell are you doing here?" the last thing you expect back is to say how beautiful your eyes are. And that was sincere, it was coming from loving kindness. And that CEO, he just stood there silently for a couple of minutes, trying to figure this out, until he opened his mouth and said, "Really?" He'd been totally sort of bamboozled by metta, by loving kindness. And they had the contract signed in the next couple of minutes, by which the CEO went out again. She had her contract because she managed to overcome the hate of the anger with some loving kindness. And she wanted to, she just finished a long flight, you know, from Australia to England. So she wanted to go back and rest, but she could not. She told me all the directors surrounded her in a circle and said, "We're not letting you go until you tell us how you did that." They were so impressed with how you can overcome anger with kindness. She had to teach them basic loving kindness meditation. They saw how powerful it was and how much it does really work. So that's actually how you overcome other people's anger. But what about your anger? It's really a shame that people have anger in our modern world. It actually kills you. But the main cause of anger today is tiredness. Because you don't rest enough, because you have so much stress, because you wear yourselves out so much, you have hardly any resilience left. Someone comes in front of you and you get really angry. Road rage is a modern phenomenon. Why? Because people are at their limit, just one small thing and they break. And they get so angry. I remember reading the case of road rage in New York a couple of years ago. I don't know what the cause of it was, but there was one car was chasing another through the streets of New York. One guy was incensed at what the driver in front did, and just really wanted to take revenge. And they got caught together on a red light intersection. So the car in front had to stop, and the car which was chasing them pulled up alongside. And the driver just opened the doors, jumped out, and started banging on the windows, trying to get in. The poor fellow inside the car was terrified. You know, if one of those windows broke, the guy had him, and you don't know what he would do. But the windows were pretty tough, he was banging, and before he could break the window, the lights changed. So he could drive off. And then the angry guy who was banging on the windows turned around to get to his car to chase him again. But this was New York. You don't leave a car with the engine running and the doors open in New York. As he turned around, he saw a street kid and his driving, ending on the driving wheel, speeding off. His car was stolen. What good karma that was. He went, what happens? When you're angry, you do stupid things like leaving the key in the ignition, engine running, doors open. In New York, street kids would take your car within a second, which they did. And this guy was then left there, standing at the intersection. The guy who was trying to sort of get revenge on and sped off, and so had his own car. Serves him right. That's karma. That's what happens to you when you do things like that. So you can see just the anguish we have is always counterproductive. It never sort of works. And a lot of times it is because we don't rest enough. Simple thing like that. Half the anger in the world will stop if we could take a good rest. Which would mean we have resilience. People call us an idiot, a dog or whatever. It wouldn't matter because when you rest it, our minds are soft. Now they're soft and malleable. But when it's really on edge, it's so brittle, a small thing just pushes us over the edge that we've had enough, we get really angry. Which is why I've told a lot of people, if you want to make a lot of money and start a business, start a sleep hotel. A resort where the most expensive item in your resort is a nice comfortable bed in a quiet room. Where you can have breakfast, lunch or dinner at any time of the day. So you don't have to wake up at any time. There is no sort of activities at all. All you do is sleep. Quietly, not having to get up, breakfast any time of the day or night, lunch any, dinner any time of the day or night, you just sleep and catch up. Would you like to go to a place like that? You would. There's a market there. So some of you, please, entrepreneurs, start it. Of course, because it's suggested by a bank, 5% commission has to go to the police authority. But it's true, and it will be a great health benefit for everybody, because even at home you can't sleep enough, or you don't sleep, well, there's just too many things going on, too much noise, too much business, too many telephones. I would have to be screened, so you can't get any SMSs, you can't tweet, you can't get emails, nothing, while you're there. Would it be a wonderful place to go? And when you've rested, you have some really good sleep, you've caught up on your sleep. When you go out afterwards, people can call you all sorts of names. Cars can come in front of you. You don't care because you're rested, you're happy, and you've got strength, resilience. So that's one of the first things, because we're so stressed out, we're so tired, that's why we get angry so much these days. And the other thing, reason we get angry is because, what is anger anyway? We get frustrated trying to control the world. You can't control the world. You know, sometimes people get angry at their wives. They come and tell me, you don't know what she's like. But I know what she's like. Many wives have come up and talked to me. And they talk about their husbands. They're all the same. The husbands have come up to me and talked about their wives. They are all the same. Don't think that you've got a defective model. They're all like that. Wives go nag, nag, nag. Husbands go woo, woo, woo. Dogs bark, crows go cow, cow. This is just the nature of things. So how can you get angry at a dog for barking? You can't do that. I've seen people get angry at traffic lights. At their computer. You stupid computer. Look, the computer hasn't got it against you. The traffic lights, they don't see you coming. Haha, it's him again. I know he's late for work. I'm going to let the car in front go through. No vectors for you. Traffic lights haven't got consciousness, they haven't got ill will. But you see people get angry at traffic lights. I saw this once when I was young, as a monk in Australia. The guy goes to work, his window was open, my window was open, it was a hot day. You've gone red again. This is not the first time you've gone red. You knew I was late. Why do you do this? This is wrong. I hate you, traffic lights. I swear, the traffic lights. And I'm sure he'll do the same when he gets home to his wife. You stupid wife, why do you do this? Look, it's a wife's nature to be like that. It's a traffic light's nature. You've got to have to accept this. Your kids. You get angry at your kids for not doing well at school. How many kids can come in the top 10%? Look, half of your kids will be below average intelligence. It's obvious, isn't it? Half have to be below average intelligence. And half above, it's just nature, okay? But not my kid. Oh, no. Other kid's fine, but not my kid. He has to be above average intelligence. And that's one of the reasons why, like I tell people, please, if your kid comes in the top 5% of school, or the bottom 5%, you're bad Buddhist parents. That's not acceptable if you're a Buddhist family, for your kid to come in the top 5% or the bottom 5%. Because in Buddhism, we always practice middle way. If your kid is in the middle somewhere, they're the best. They're Buddhist. The top 5%, 1 or 5%, no, disallow it. That's what people are like. The other piece of advice, I don't know if I gave this last year, but I've been giving this in many, many countries, because there's many young people here. If you're young and you're not married yet, advice for people not yet married. Never ever, boys, never ever marry a beautiful girl. If you marry a drop-dead gorgeous girl, you'll be jealous for the rest of your life. Other boys will look at her, and you don't know whether they're going to have an affair or not. Because she's gorgeous, she's good-looking. You'll have a lot of suffering, a lot of doubt for the rest of your life. But if you marry an ugly girl, you have nothing to worry about. She can go on business overseas, no one wants her, so she's definitely going to get married. And she'd be so grateful that she married you, she'll never get angry at you. You'd have a girl, a wife you can trust, who's always kind and caring for the rest of your life. So boys, marry ugly girls. Now, as for you girls, never marry a rich boy. Marry a poor one. If you marry a rich guy, you know what happens? They're so rich, they have affairs, they have mistresses. They do, you know, when you're rich. Check the newspapers. And boys, you know, you don't think that you can hide it. That's a problem with guys. They think they can get away with adultery. You all know what happened last year. The head of the CIA committed adultery. Not even he could keep it a secret. How the hell do you think you can keep it a secret? He's the head of the biggest spy agency. Every covert piece of information he could possibly get, his wife found out, wise and clever than the CIA. So be careful. So anyway, if you marry a poor boy, he can't afford a mistress. But mistresses, they're not going for you because you look good or because you're good in bed. Mistresses don't go for boys who are good in bed. Mistresses go for your wallet. They want money. No money, no honey. That's what it is, kind of be honest. So if you marry a poor boy, you've got nothing to worry about for the rest of your life. You can't afford a mistress. Adultery is not in the question. You've got to save marriage forever. So remember, boys, always marry ugly girls. Girls, always marry poor boys. You'll be happy ever after. Peace of the boys. So all you pretty girls, be careful. Don't go to beauty parlor, go to ugly parlor. Then you'll be more attractive. And all you boys who are rich, now give all your excess money to the donation box over there. And then you might actually get a better girlfriend. So anyway, what's that supposed to do with anger? I don't know. But anyway. I always like to think outside the box. So when you get sort of, you get angry, it's just a stupid response. It really sort of hurts yourself. So try and rest a bit. Number two, don't try and control so much. You can't change the world. And you know, when we try and change the world, we get so frustrated, we get angry. And it's just this whole process of control leads to frustration. You can't control your wife, you can't control your husband, you can't control your kids, you can't even control yourself. So how on earth do you think you can control all these other people? Instead, just care for people. Don't try and control them. Care for them. And if you care for them, then you never get frustrated. Lower your expectations of your husband. Should be a pretty easy thing to do. Lower the expectations of your wife. Please, lower the expectation of your monks and nuns. With high expectations, you always get disappointed and frustrated. Because it makes you angry. If you lower the expectations, then you find you're much happier. I've said that a long time, and that's actually another of my stories in the Harvard Business School blog. They said one of the biggest causes of the GFC was the too high expectations of companies. They expected so much profit, so much growth, which was not achievable, which is why they reached too high, why they struggled so much to get extra profits, that they eventually went bust. They said, no, lower your expectations. Sustainable companies are ones who lower their expectations, not raise them. It's a beautiful bit of saying, because it came from me, from my talks. Because I know there's quite a few of my sayings I've got on Harvard Business School blog. Someone's listening to them. And that's the same in marriage. Lower expectations, and then you don't get angry. You don't get disappointed, you don't get frustrated. Lower the expectations of yourself. You don't have to be perfect. Then you don't get angry. And the simile which I gave for not getting angry is remember the simile of the forest. I said it a couple of days ago, but it fits in here. Simile of the forest is if ever you see a perfect tree with all the limbs in place, all equally spaced, all leaves, very, very nice and healthy, that is a plantation. In a forest, a real natural forest, all the trees are crooked and scarred, with branches hanging off. Which would you rather walk in? A forest or a plantation? To me, the damaged trees are always the most beautiful. The ones which are imperfect are the most delightful. Just like each one of you is crooked. All husbands are crooked. All wives are damaged goods. They are. That's what makes them beautiful and lovable. So that means you don't have to get angry at them. They're just who they are. And if you don't get angry at a tree for being crooked, you actually love that tree, you see its beauty, and there's no more cause for anger. A lot of time anger is asking from this world something it can never give us. That's called anger. Asking from the world something it can never give us. Anger at your husband is asking from him what a man can never give you. You have to lower your expectations. Anger at your wife is asking from a woman what she can never give you. Anger at your children, asking from them what they can never supply you. You get angry. Anger is asking from a traffic light what it can never give you. It can't turn green just for you every time you're in a rush. That's called the cause of anger. The solution? Understand what the world can provide. understand what a husband is, what a wife is, what a child is, what a parent is. Understand how much they can give and what they can't give. And adjust your expectations to fit. Lower them, don't raise them. And then you never get angry. It's just people being people. A long time ago, as head monk of the monastery over in Perth, I lowered the expectations of my monks. And I'm much happier now. You don't expect so much. You have much more love and happiness and joy. If you raise your expectations, you will always get frustrated. Anger is asking from the world what it can never give you. Anger at getting cancer, anger at getting old, anger at dying. You can't stop these things. Stop getting angry about them. Instead, there are the expectations that you can find peace and freedom and no need to get angry ever more. Do you get angry at politicians? Lower your expectations. I know it's pretty low expectations already. Lower them support. And then you never get upset or disappointed. Okay, so that's the cause of the anger. What anger is, and it's just how to overcome it. I set a few little strategies there. You know, lower expectations, giving some kindness when other people get angry at you. It actually does work. Now, don't give anger for when you sort of you're abused and called a dog. Look at your bottom. If someone starts really shouting and getting mad at you, it must mean they've got brain damage. Just assume that your boss at work hit his head that morning. Whatever it is, these are strategies which work. And if you get abused and scolded publicly, remember the donkey in the bottom of the world. Just shrug it off and step it in. You're always much higher spiritually, emotionally, and then people just realize that anger is not a means to control you, and anger is part of your repertoire to respond to the world. Instead, you just understand how the world is, and you never ever ask for things which the world can never supply. And you don't get angry anymore. So that's a little talk, impromptu, on anger. Good. Okay, so some questions. Questions, comments, or complaints? On anger. Yes, over there. Oh, okay. Get over there in the back, that's all. In the middle, yeah, you. Yeah. Collective anger. Something. And that group anger is even more dangerous. All it takes is one person to be still and calm. And the whole group sort of starts to cool off. That's why using speech in such a situation can be very powerful. So everyone is shouting, you keep calm, and they ask you, speak in a soft, low voice. And everybody's excitement starts to calm down. It does this. I'm exaggerating there, don't go that way, otherwise I start laughing. But you can see what I'm talking about there. It's amazing is how we can actually control people, calm them down with just a few little kind things, a few little slow things, soft voices rather than raised voices, not fast. Because you know that's what happens when you're angry. Raise your voice, speak very fast. Doing the opposite calms people down. And of course, in that group, you realize that anger doesn't get you anywhere in the world. It doesn't find solutions. It just destroys things. It doesn't create anything. Now, when I've been a monk, I've been building the whole monastery where I live. You know, it takes a huge amount of work to build something. But it takes a few seconds of some CX explosive to pull it down. And when you see how much work it is to build, the destruction of buildings, blowing them up, it's so sad. to destroy his easy, to create his hard. You know, you're a woman, you might be a mother. How much does it take to create a child? To raise him and bring him up. And because of anger, some stupid person kills them. To destroy is so easy, to create is so hard. And anger is just the easy way out of destroying things. Please, don't follow that easy way. You know, you've created friendships maybe over years. And one argument and friendship's over. You have a marriage you've really built up, taking a lot of effort and time and sacrifice, but one terrible act of anger and it's divorce from here on in. To build, to create is difficult. That's why it's so valuable. It's almost sacred. I don't want to desecrate that. So please, remember just how hard it is to build these things up. Don't destroy them in anger so easily. Little kid over there, how much time it took to paint that kid to where it is now? And anger can so easily crush it. Please never do that. It's valuing the opposite of anger. The creation, harmony, peace. It's so important. I tell this other little simile for people. It's again an old simile, but it's a very powerful one. I told this at the university, you know, when I first came here. Please excuse me for keeping repeating on these stories, but I've talked so much in one day. In one day, how many hours have I talked so far? This morning was 8:30 to 1 o'clock, the 2 o'clock to 8 to 11, 3 hours in the morning. 3 hours in the afternoon, and another couple of hours now. 8 hours of constant talking. You are going to, and over 3 or 4 days, you are going to repeat yourself. And I know that sometimes people ask me, but why, Ajahn Brahm, do you repeat these stories again and again? And the reason is because you ask the same questions again. That's fair, fair. So, this was that story of I told you at the university, when the US Marines in Guantanamo Bay were accused of taking a copy of the Holy Quran and flushing it down the toilet. You all remember that. And the Muslims were outraged and demonstrating all over the world. And a journalist in the Australian newspaper called me a day or two afterwards to say, first of all, did you see that article? Yes. And the journalist was doing a story on this. And his take on the story was to ring the leaders of the major religions in Australia. I think he went to Cardinal Pell, some archbishop in the Anglican Church, a rabbi, a Hindu. Now he came to a Buddhist. He said, I've rang all these other people, I've got their responses, what they would do if they took a copy of the Holy Bible and flushed it down the toilet. Now I'm asking you as a Buddhist leader, what would you do, Ajahn Brahm, if you took a Buddhist holy text and flushed it down your toilet? Without any hesitation, I said, sir, if they did that, the first thing I would do was call a plumber. Because I need to use that toilet. And then girl of Islam, and he praised me. He said, that's the first sensible answer I've got all day. Well done, I could have picked that. I think it was picked. But then I got serious, and I said, that's just a little joke, but seriously, you can flush as many Buddhist holy books as you like down my toilet and I won't get upset or angry. You can actually blow up the Buddha statues relative to Bamiyan and I will not get angry. You can even burn down my monastery and temples, took years to build and I will not get angry. You can even kill the monks and nuns and I won't get angry. You can destroy as many temples, Buddha statues, monks as you like. But I never allow you to destroy Buddhism. And I made the difference between the container and the contents. The statue is a container. What does it represent? What's it teaching you? What's its contents? The book is a container. What does it say inside? The monks and the nuns were containers. What do we teach? Even the buildings are containers. What are the buildings there for? They're supposed to be teaching peace, forgiveness, kindness, love, non-violence, gentleness. That's what we're supposed to be teaching. So when you can distinguish the container and the contents, you can destroy as many containers as you like. You can flush as many Buddhist holy books, burn them, desecrate them, piss on them, I don't care. But I'm never allowed to destroy what they contain. Peace, forgiveness, compassion, love. That is more important for me. When I said that, they really got it. Why do some Muslims forget the contents and just worry about the containers? It doesn't matter how many times you desecrate a Quran or a Buddhist holy book or a Bible. What on earth does it say inside those books? What is the containers of religion? Peace, kindness, love, that's what it should be. Certainly that's very important. So please, if someone desecrates the Buddha, as they do in some countries, they were doing that in Korea recently. The evangelical Christians were going to Buddhist temples and writing graffiti on the Buddha statues and on the walls. So you're not destroying Buddhism, you're just the containers. But if the monks or people react with anger, do the same to others, you destroy Buddhism. If they make a Buddha bar, or if they make ladies' underwear with Buddha's head on them, is that destroying Buddhism? It's not right to do that. But if you get angry at that, then they've destroyed Buddhism. So please, remember the difference between the container and the contents. You can always build another Buddha statue. You can always build another temple. It's hard, we can do that. You've got this wonderful thing called insurance. But once peace, forgiveness, kindness, compassion, and tolerance is destroyed, then Buddhism is gone. If you understand that, then you understand the difference between the container and the contents. It's a very important lesson in today's world. So don't get angry when someone destroys the religious containers. Maintain the contents. Make sense? Okay, so don't get angry when someone calls Buddhism a stupid religion. They've got brain damage, obviously. The other day, a Christian, I think it was in Malaysia or something, they were saying, nothing is better than God. I said, yeah, you're absolutely right, I agree with you. I said, what? I said, nothing is better than God. I said, yeah, it's true. Emptiness, anatta, nothing. It's much better than your God. I could be very cheeky sometimes. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Come on in. What about anger? When was the last time you got angry? Put your hand up. Be honest. You've been angry today. Very good. Do you feel ashamed? Now, only a caution. You're very good, you're honest. Most of the other people are dishonest. But number one, if you do get angry, don't get embarrassed about it. It's part of the course. The only people who don't get angry are either fully enlightened people or ones, you know, just close to that, non-returners. So, if you are not enlightened on the next stage, you are going to get angry. Be honest about it. So, number one, yeah, I get angry. Because in denial, if you don't think it's a problem, then it keeps on going. So, when you realize, yeah, I do get angry, then find out the causes of it. And I mentioned it's, a lot of it is tiredness, frustration. Expecting too much of the people you live with, expecting too much of the government, of the system, whatever it is. So lower the expectations, take a rest, find out the causes of these things. And find different strategies so you don't get so tired, you don't expect so much. You accept life as it really is, rather than as it should be. That way then you can be a person who doesn't get angry. And usually Buddhists have got a very good reputation for being peaceful, tolerant people who don't get angry that much. Isn't that wonderful? We have that reputation, so please don't spoil it. Now, the religion which isn't angry. Yes?
Do clearly hurt you, and there's that deep-seated anger that's been there for a long time. I think there's something much of a thing that you can practice metta. And then
okay, saying someone has hurt you some time ago, really deeply hurt you, and you've got this deep-seated anger, and you're saying that I said that metta can overcome it. Not metta to the person, metta to yourself, for goodness sake. So it is an old story, someone calls you a pig. What do you do? What do most people do? What's their response when you're called a pig? Most people start to think, they call me a pig. They've got no right to call me a pig. It's not polite to call me a pig. And if you're wise, you realize they've just called you a pig 3 more times. Every time you remember it, they're calling you a pig again. The wise person, if they call you a pig, they only call you a pig once. And you forget it. I don't keep rubbish. How many times when you go to the toilet and you wipe your bottom with the toilet paper, how many of you then put the toilet paper in your pocket? Because you only use one side of it. You keep it to recycle. You use the other side the next time you want to go. Isn't that being environmentally sensitive? You waste so much paper. That's trees. That's the environment. Please, for goodness sake, to save the environment, use both sides of the toilet paper. No one does that, do they? It's filthy stuff. You don't keep it. So why do we keep these filthy words that people talk about us? You're a pig. To me, I put it in the toilet and flush it down straight away. I let it go. I delete it. I'm not going to keep that sort of stuff. So, someone hurt you many years ago. And every time you remember that, they're hurting you again. When I figured that out, I thought how stupid I am. They hurt me. Every time I remember that, they're hurting me again. So I don't remember it. I just delete it. Have you got a photo album at home? Well, I've been to many people's houses. I see the photos they have on the wall. They've got the photos of their marriage. They've got the photos of when they graduated from university. They've got the photos of when they're on holiday somewhere. I've never ever seen in a person's house a photograph of their divorce. It's not there. Here's me and the lawyers. I've never seen a photograph of you stuck in the traffic on the way to work on a Monday morning. I've never seen a photograph of you when you're sick in hospital. You only have happy photographs at home. The unpleasant ones, if you do take them, you throw them away. There is another photographic album between your ears called your memory. Unfortunately, you keep so many unpleasant photographs in there, and that's ridiculous. Please delete them, throw them away, and just keep the nice ones. The photographs of that wonderful talk you went to the other place, wherever it was, from this wonderful monk from over the west. Keep the happy memories and delete all the bad ones. Someone hurt you. Delete. Why am I keeping that? Because every time you remember it, it hurts you again. You keep the happy memories, and every time you remember those, you get joy, you get energy, you get motivation. The way we use our memory should be the way we keep our photograph album. Delete the unpleasant ones. Keep the ones which are nice. When you do that, yes, someone did hurt you, but they only hurt you once. Delete. Gone. Why can't we do that? It's just that attitude, that is. That's all it is. We're so negative, we connect negative stuff to positive stuff. We've been trained ourselves not just to brush it aside, that doesn't matter, we just deal with negativity in life. That's why we get angry. That's why we get upset. Someone hurts you, yeah, that's natural, it does happen, man. People cheat each other. Welcome to the world. I don't expect any different. But what I do expect, me to let it go. So when you realize it's not their fault anymore, they've hurt you once, they've done their job. It's your fault, you keep remembering it. You keep recording, you keep worrying about it. You allow them to cheat you again, every time you remember it. Don't allow other people to control your happiness. They don't need to. You take charge of your happiness. No one can upset me. And if I let you, and I refuse to let you upset me, I refuse to let you control my happiness. You can call me whatever you like, and people have. Remember this one time, I was in Perth, it was a hot day, we didn't have any air conditioning in our car, so we had all the windows down. There were a few kids, about 17 or 18, out for a good time. They saw this bunch of weirdos in the car, with brown robes and bald heads. They pulled up alongside me, I was in the passenger seat. And one of them, they had this magazine, and they had their mouth open, and they were telling me, "Look at this, look at this." So I turned around, you know what they were showing me? It was a Playboy magazine. Had it open, having good fun. "Hey, look at this, you son of a bug." They opened it up. Did I get angry? No, it's just, you know, young kids haven't done what young kids do, being stupid. Did I look? Oh, I'm a good luck. That man was a playboy, the driver of the car told me. That's my story, and I've seen it to it. I'm not going to get upset. I thought it was really funny. I would have done the same. If I'd have seen the mum when I was a lay person, because you know, you're stupid when you're young. You're just having fun, that's all. So you don't get upset or angry when people play. That's what young people do. You know, they're having fun. They're just trying to wind you up. And when you laugh, the whole thing is over. Yeah, you're okay, we're having fun. And finish. But you never get angry back. So please don't get angry. It doesn't help anybody. All the expectations. And if you know something does happen like that, you just learn from it. You acknowledge, you forgive, which means you don't get angry. And you learn from these things. Okay, another question?
Someone continuously harassing someone, and the other person is tolerating so long.
Oh, okay.
What is your best advice to?
Okay, someone's always harassing you, and you're tolerating it. Usually, if you really tolerate it, just peaceful and happy, they stop harassing you. It's just a waste of time. They go to harass somebody else. It's more fun when they respond. That's happened a lot of time. They try and harass me. I refuse to sort of budge. I don't allow them to press my buttons. So, you know, fun. It's a waste of time. It's like getting angry at a wall or harassing at a rock. They don't do it anymore. That's what usually happens. But usually, most people have a hard time doing that. You usually do get upset, which is why they keep harassing you. They've got you controlled. So first of all, see if you can improve your own response to the harassment. If it's physical or financial or sexual, of course we've got laws in Australia, go and tell the boss. You know, don't just sit there and just take it. You know, there's rules and regulations. A lot of time I tell Buddhists, well, you can take it, you know, because you're peaceful, you don't get angry back, but that person does the same to weaker people. Have compassion for them, not just yourself, but for others. Report it to the boss that this is unacceptable behavior. And you're not doing that to hurt the person, you're doing that to protect others in the company who would be harassed similarly. That's usually the way to deal with that. And a lot of times, a company would send them to anger management or find out exactly what they're doing that for. They must be going through some stress in their life. It could be that the family is breaking apart, having a difficult time with the wife, or you know, someone's got cancer or having some financial problems. A lot of times, that harassment's got a cause. Find out the cause, deal with the cause, and the anger disappears. So that's an advice if you know people are really harassing you. It's not to say that, you know, you have to be the doormat, you have to take, you know, everything. Because there's the other story which is in the book about the bad snake. So here comes the story of the bad snake. You know, I remember when we had the opening of Dhamma Lotus Center, Peter Costello came? I told that story to him.
Buddha Lotus
Center. So he put it over here, the opening. And I told that story to Peter Costello when he was still sort of years and years ago, this was. And anyway, the bad snake story. Once there was a very bad snake. He was mean and malicious. And he would bite people for fun. His fun, not the people's fun, I guess. He wasn't being attacked, he was just a bad snake. But then one day, when the snake got old, he started to wonder, what happens to snakes when they die? Have you ever thought that out? When you go to heaven, I mean, you have the idea of heaven for human beings. Is there heaven for dogs as well? And for cats? And mice? Do they go to the same heaven, the cats and the mice? And the dogs? It'd be bad news for the mice if the cats are up there too. But anyway, you wonder, what happens to snakes when they die? Because people actually do that. When you start getting old, you always start getting religious. It's amazing how many old people come to the temple. So the old snake started. The old snake, he heard there was a holy snake in close by. And so he decided to sort of go and sort of visit this holy snake. But like many people, you know, you have a reputation. You spend all his life, you know, scorning religion. So to rock up to the temple, that would be humiliating for him. So he went in disguise. He wore a big hat, a scarf, and a raincoat. And he slithered up. He slithered up to the temple. And sure enough, there was this holy snake, you know, on a rock, you know, in brown robes with a bald head, giving a sermon to all these other little snakes. And the bad snake, like, you know, people when they first come, they always sit by the door. You know, like the guys in the back over there, sit up and get out. So he sat by the door, just in case he didn't like it, in disguise, so no one recognized him. And as he listened for the first time, it actually made sense. This is actually reasonable. And from making sense, you get inspiration. And after being inspired, he was totally converted. And so he actually took off his coat. People were surprised. A really bad snake with a bad reputation had now become a Buddhist. And so he stood it up to the holy snake and said, he confessed, I've been a really bad snake all my life. I didn't realize it. I'm so sorry. I want to change. I want to change now. Please give me the three refuges and the five precepts. So the holy snake gave the bad snake the three refuges and the five precepts. And the bad snake was converted to being a really good snake. He gave a donation on the way out, coins. The reason why people give coins is because people can hear them putting something in the box. And he's a good snake from now on. But of course snakes can't talk. So the people didn't realize he changed. Even though he had an Amnesty International badge on his chest. And he supported Greenpeace. People didn't know that. They thought he was sort of a bad snake, so they were always avoiding him. But there was one day someone walked right past the bad snake, you know, thinking of something else, and the snake never bit. And they were so surprised. The snake could have bitten and didn't. And from that moment on, people in the village realized the snake had changed. He was not bad anymore. So he walked right past his hole. You know, even when he was walking past, he was sitting cross-cold in meditation with a silly smile on his face. And they just ignored him because he was now a vegetarian safe snake. But people realized that, they were kind. You know, there's always a few people who take advantage of non-violent ones. In that village, there was a group of kids, a gang of bad kids. When they saw that snake as a vegetarian, supporting Greenpeace and Amnesty International, supporting gay rights. There are gay snakes as well, you know. And they took advantage of it. They thought he was weak. So they went out and they started abusing him, first of all. You're a slimy creep, they called him. You know, which is actually quite true. Now, they are creeps, snakes. You're a disgrace to your species. You're just an oversized worm, not a real snake. They said all sorts of bad things this day. And the snakes have got pride too. They don't mean like you call oversized worms and creeps. But he couldn't defend himself. In the past, he'd gone by one of them. But he couldn't do that anymore. He's got the five precepts. So he just had to take the verbal abuse. And because he didn't react, you know what happens when people start scolding you and abusing you verbally? Then they go to the next stage. They start throwing things at you, being violent. And these kids started throwing stones at that snake. A few of those stones hit the snake and they really hurt. And the snake had to take it. Because he couldn't defend himself, he couldn't bite. And then the kids got more brave and came up with sticks and started beating him on the back. The bad snake had to take it. But as he was taking his beating, he realized, in the real world, you can't keep five precepts. You have to defend yourself, otherwise you're a doormat. Otherwise people take advantage of you. It's okay to keep five precepts in a monastery or a temple, but in the real world you've got to be tough. It's a dog-eat-dog world, it's a snake-bite-snake world. You've got to be tough to defend yourself. So after the beating was over, he slithered painfully to the temple, all cut and bleeding. And when the holy snake saw him coming, covered in blood and bruises, the holy snake said, "What's happened to you?" And the bad snake said, "It's your fault." "It's what do you mean my fault? You told me to keep the five precepts. Look what happened to me. You can't keep the five precepts as a snake. You'll defend yourself." "Oh, you stupid snake," said the holy snake. "You idiot snake. You incompetent snake," said the holy snake. "It's true, the five precepts teaches you not to bite anybody, but it doesn't tell you not to hiss." And that's all a snake needs to do to defend themselves. Just hiss. And the boys will run away. I told that to Peter Costello. In Parliament, you don't have to bite, just hiss. You've got a very good advice. So in life, defend yourself, you know, against harassment. Don't bite, it's okay to hiss. Okay? You understand? So that's the bad snake story. Okay to hiss, not to bite. Okay, any other questions or comments? Okay, you're gone.
What advice do you give to children or young teens who father,
again,
not
caring
for family, but always
caring
for them, and also sometimes to the extent of violence?
Okay. Yeah, these kids with violent fathers or violent mothers, violent parents. Now, that is not acceptable in Australia. You have to call the authorities. It is a problem because sometimes violent parents can actually kill their kids. If not killing them, they scar them emotionally for so many years. So sometimes the wife, the non-abusive partner, has to take control of that situation and actually give them the authority. You've got to hiss. Because otherwise, you know, you're being incompetent and also, you know, you're just harming your kids. If it's not that bad, you know, it's an abusive father, but not too bad. Maybe they get drunk. I've been telling this to a lot of people. If you've got a parent who gets drunk, a lot of the times they don't realize they're drunk. They think they can handle the alcohol. And so the first thing with any addiction to alcohol, to gambling or violence, is for a person to admit there's a problem. That's the first and hardest step. Once they know that gambling is a problem, that drunkenness is a problem, that violence is a problem, then there's so many ways of dealing with it. Accepting it, admitting it first of all. So I've told a lot of young people what to do, because young people are very smart these days. Get out your iPhone, video them, and post it on YouTube. Post your father's drunken behavior on YouTube. Embarrass the hell out of it, out of compassion, of course. And when he sees, and his friends see, what he's like when he's drunk, or what he's like when he's gambling, or what he's like when he shouts at his wife, It embarrasses him so much he realizes, yes, there is a problem. And then you can take it off YouTube when he goes to get some anger management or goes to AA or just something to stop gambling. Sometimes you need some hard lessons for people to admit there's a problem. Remember one friend, he was had a trouble with drunkenness. And what saved him, he was so drunk one day, so that he collapsed against the little bar heat he had in your house. He had serious burns to his arm afterwards. Because he bled against it. He was drunk, he didn't feel anything, it's like anesthetic. When he came to, there was a huge burn on his arm, which took months to recover from. And he realized, yes, there is a problem. Realizing there is a problem, this has to be the first step. And sometimes you do need harsh measures before they get burnt to use humiliation first of all. Sometimes you need that. Post it on YouTube. And I'm saying that seriously. Kids, sons, daughters, if you've got a father who gets drunk, video them, put it on YouTube. You say, what do you do that for? Say, Ajahn Brahm said so. They can come and get angry at me. Because it works. Otherwise, they get drunk and drunk again, have a gambling problem, and they never realize it is a problem. If it's not a problem, you shouldn't be embarrassed about it. If it is a problem, the other people see it. Somebody came and asked me they had a problem with watching pornographic videos on the internet. How can I stop that? Very easy. Put on your Facebook that I watch pornographic videos on YouTube. Put on your Facebook page. You embarrass the hell out of you. Tell your parents. When you get found out, you're embarrassed. That's the first way to stop. If it's always hidden, you think no one's going to find out, then the addiction continues. Okay, so if anyone watches pornography, please catch them and put it on the BSV website. This man watches pornography. That'll soon stop them, you know. It will. They get so embarrassed. Because otherwise it's an addiction that will go on forever. Can we do that? Have a page on the BSV website? Name and shame page. As a social service to the members of the Buddhist Society. You have a face, have you? Left it?
Right.
Ah, you're in trouble now. Stop before it's too late. Okay. Any other questions before we finish off for the night? Okay. Oh, yeah. One more question. Yes, go on. Attachment to things. Depends what you want to be attached to. I say when you're riding on the back of a motorbike, please be attached. Because people think Buddhism always in Buddhism, so they can let it go. No, it's not to let it go. We let go of the things we need to let go of, attached to the things we should need to be attached to. Please be attached to your trousers, your skirt. Don't just walk away, let go of it. But if you attach the bad things, realizing the harm, when you realize they're dangerous, it's easy to let them go. Like smoking. Unfortunately, people are really good in Australia now. We've got rid of most smoking. There's still a few people smoke. And it's disgusting, especially the girls. What do you do that for, girls? I had a girlfriend who smoked. She tasted horrible when I kissed her. And I've done many girls because they smoke. So if you want a boyfriend, please give up smoking. You know, the older guys, you know, you kiss a girl with smoke, it tastes awful. It's yucky. So please don't do that. If you want a nice boyfriend, then stop smoking. So, there's so many good ways of actually giving up these things. But for a lot of times, an attachment, yeah, it's hard to stop. But the longer you put it on, the harder it becomes. So any attachment, any bad thing, stop it right now. Sooner the better. It's easier. And these are attachments which everybody knows are harmful. They don't really help at all. So those addictions which everybody knows are bad for your health and other people's health, please let them go as soon as you possibly can. When you notice the danger in them, of course it's easy. Okay? Material possessions. That's why we need the donation box over there. It's called the Letting Go Box. For those of you who don't, look, it was proved by science. There was this research was done in the United States and Europe and also in Australia. We all know if you have too much money, if your income is too high, you have too many worries in life. Investment, avoiding tax. You ask any of the very rich people in Melbourne, they are so caught up with maintaining the money they have. There's too much worries, worrying about the stock market, worrying about the exchange rate. But you don't have any investment, you don't have those worries anymore. Always looking at the stock market going up, the stock market going down, concerned about the latest taxes and the latest information on what's, you know, going to sell, what's going to rise, what's going to drop. You have so many worries. I remember staying with a guy who was an investor, and he was always watching Bloomberg Channel. He meditated, 5 minutes, I've got to go back to Bloomberg to find out what's the hot stock, what's the... He had never any peace. I was with this multi-billionaire in Kuala Lumpur a couple of weeks ago, worth $5 billion apparently, US. He had 6 phones, 6 Blackberries for the different parts of his companies. Never had any peace at all. Having too much money is a lot of suffering. Having not enough money is suffering because you can't afford things. It's really tough to pay the bills. People know that too much and too little is suffering. There is a middle way. An optimum income for optimum happiness. And these are psychologists and sociologists worked out here in Australia. Now, this was a few years ago, so adapting to the CPI, it would now be about 60,000 Aussie dollars a year. If you're earning about 60,000 a year, single person income, that is the optimum for happiness. Less than that, you can't afford things. More than that, you've got too many problems with worries, with investment and other things. So, if there's anyone here earning much more than the optimum $60,000, the Buddhist Society of Victoria, out of great compassion, can help you be happier. You can be much happier! Anything over 60K, put in the box. Guarantee this is science, the evidence is there, it's compelling. I will send it to you, you can read it. We can, out of compassion, which is our job as Buddhist monks, we can make you happier. Do you want to be happy? Now you want to. I've tried that so many times, it never ever works. Greed is much more powerful than science. That's a tax burden. It's true, you know. Now, I need to tell this story. Whenever we're doing a fundraiser, I told this at the last dinner ceremony in Perth. I think I might have told this when we did a fundraiser here about Ajahn Chah's story of giving anything you've got. Because this was a man from Sydney, Ken told me the story personally. He said that when Ajahn Chah became famous, you know, he wanted to go and see the great master to ask these deep questions, you know, from someone who was enlightened. So he travelled all the way from Sydney to Thailand, to Bangkok, from Bangkok to Ubon, from Ubon to Warin, from Warin to Ajahn Chah's monastery. It's a long journey, just to ask these questions. No other reason, not to go touring around, not to go shopping, just to see this great monk and ask his questions. That's the only reason for his journey. Eventually, when he found Ajahn Chah's monastery, he found the hut where Ajahn Chah was. He saw him there, but he was surrounded with so many people asking their questions. And he waited about 2 or 3 hours, and Ajahn Chah hadn't come close to asking him. So he realized Ajahn Chah was too popular, There's no way he's going to ask these questions. So he got up and left. As he walked away, he realized it was another hour before his taxi would come to take him back to the railway station, which would take him to Bangkok and then back to the airport to catch the flight home. He missed the opportunity, but because it was an hour late, he saw the other monks were sweeping the monastery grounds. So he picked up a broom and started sweeping himself. Remember, good karma always has good results. So he started cleaning up with the other monks sweeping. He'd only been sweeping about 10 or 15 minutes, he told me. He felt an arm on his shoulder. He turned around. The arm belonged to Ajahn Chah. Ajahn Chah was both wise and really compassionate. He knew that man had come from a long distance and had got up from his seat to give him a bit of teaching. He didn't have time to answer all the questions. So all Ajahn Chah said to this man from Sydney was this. Now, through the translator, if you are going to sweep, give it everything you've got. And then Ajahn Chah went away. Because these were words from a very wise person, the man realized it was not just about sweeping the ground. It was whatever you do in life. If you are sleeping, give sleep everything you've got. Don't worry about the work tomorrow. Put all your energy into sleeping. You know, if you're washing the dishes, give it anything you've got so you can make a very good job of it. If you're giving a talk, give it anything you've got. Don't save anything for later on. If you are playing, having a good time, going to a party, play anything you've got. If you're meditating, don't worry about other stuff. Give meditation everything you've got. That's how he understood it. He said that was the most powerful teaching he'd ever got in his life. In his business, he gave that everything he's got. He was highly successful in his business. In his marriage, he gave his marriage everything he got. Had a wonderful marriage with lovely kids. Great health. And when he was meditating, he gave everything he got. And had really good meditation. A simple teaching for anything he did in life. Give everything he's got. He was wealthy, happy, healthy, great relationship, and successful. What a wonderful teaching that is. So at the ceremony for raising money for our monastery, I said, remember that teaching. When you pass the donation box, remember, if you're giving a donation, give it everything you've got. It didn't work also. I give monastic like everything I've got, I give it 100%, that's why you're successful. So that's the way to overcome attachments. If you make a donation, give it anything. Doesn't work. Anyway, thank you for listening. Okay, I think it's probably time to finish off for tonight, because you've got work tomorrow morning, so am I. I do my work, so you do your work. So thank you all for listening. Is there any sort of closing announcements? Other than meditation day tomorrow, as we did today, and another talk, same place, same venue, same stories. No, there'll be different stories. See you all tomorrow.